I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people warning against the troubling growth of Satanism and comparing the teachings of different religions. Join us, sit back, and enjoy some free expression. One of the most difficult questions for a Christian to answer, and it's one that agnostics and atheists love to try and stump us with, is how can you be confident in your faith when there are numerous religions, each with its own understanding of God and life and how the world works? What makes you so sure Christianity is right? Well, the truth is, of course, there are many religions, and each has millions of followers who are convinced that their view is right. Logic tells us that all faiths can't be right, at least not about everything, and if we take the idea of religion seriously, we owe it to ourselves to ask what it is that other faiths do believe. Mark Lanier has brought the examination skills of an attorney to this inquiry. He's got a new book called Religions on Trial. A lawyer examines Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, and more. Mark, thanks so much for being with us. What prompted you to look into the world's religions in this very intensive and lawyerly way?
Bill, it's fascinating to me as a lawyer, and it's fascinating to me as a Christian, because I too have heard those same comments from atheists and others of how can you be so smug? How can you be so arrogant? And I think that the answer to that is one that makes a whole lot of sense, but is rooted in a story of C.S. Lewis, who was an atheist, but also a dear friend of a good Catholic scholar named J.R.R. Tolkien. Mm. Now, Tolkien was devout in his faith, and they would often speak of God. And Lewis threw that same argument out to Tolkien and said, "How can you Christians be so arrogant? You think that you are right, and everyone else in the world is wrong." And the reply that stumped Lewis was when Tolkien said, "Oh, but you're wrong, my friend, because you see, as Christians, we believe that God has sown his truth into this world. And so you will find elements of God's truth, not only in the world, but in various religious systems, as he has prepared people's hearts to receive him in his truth. And so you can find truth in lots of areas." He said the real arrogant one who thinks that they're right and everyone else is wrong is the atheist. Because the atheist is convinced the Christian's wrong, the Muslim's wrong, the Jew is wrong, the Buddhist is wrong, the Hindu is wrong, fill in the blank. And so the real arrogant one are the atheists who say there absolutely is no God and everybody who thinks there is a God is wrong. Now, if you take those that believe there is a God and you examine them, under Christian faith, I, Mark Lanier speaking now, believe that you will find elements of truth in almost every serious religious expression, because people long for truth, and when they find truth, they grab it like a magnet does metal. The problem is there are limited aspects of this truth in various systems, and they don't have the fuller truth that is explained within Christianity. So what I tried to do as I went through the book and examined things from a legal perspective is I tried to say, okay, where are those areas in other religious expressions that have elements of truth in them, and what are those truths? But where are they missing truth that would help them better answer life's big questions?
All right. Let's have some examples of that. Looking at Islam, for instance, which, of course, represents a serious challenge to Christianity. What did you land on as the great truths and insights of Muhammad?
Islam gets a bad rap by some extremists who hold Muslim views but do so in a way that's akin to what we in the West would identify as terrorism. But there are a lot of devout Muslims who abhor that violent, almost anarchical approach to life. And one of them was a fellow that I spent a good bit of time with, Hakeem Olajuwon. You know, he was kind, he was polite, he was humble, and he was a major basketball player, one of the best centers to ever play the game. But it was interesting, during the NBA season in the month of Ramadan, Hakeem, as a devout Muslim, would fast during the daylight hours, even though he was playing games. And that would include fasting from water, not simply food. That type of a devotion is something that is admirable, and it's also based in truth, in that the God that calls us into worship and into relationship does seek from us a high level of personal commitment. And so anytime you see someone appreciating that personal level of commitment, you've got to appreciate its truth. I'll go a second one. Muslim, if it's famous for anything, it's famous for its idea that there is one God. It is a monotheistic religion. And the idea of multiple gods is one that it views heretical. And I think that's true. I think it's shared by Judaism, it's shared by Christianity. There is one God. There aren't competing gods on the scene. You don't have a situation like the Greeks or the Romans or the Norse had, where the gods are jockeying for position with each other and fighting and competing. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit into the way we know the world to be, that there would be gods of that nature. And so you've got to also respect Islam's appreciation and ideology of one God. Now, it's missing something. One God alone cannot be the answer. There's got to be some multifaceted understanding of that God to better explain community, communication, love, God's self-sufficiency, all of those things that go into what you and I and your listeners know to be caught up in the concept of the Trinity.
Right.
But the Trinity itself is not three gods. It's one God in three persons. And that's language that's loaded and difficult to parse. But the unity of God is another thing that Islam has that's got some truth to it.
I think Christians do certainly acknowledge that sense of unity, which we do share with both Jews and Muslims. When you get into things like Hinduism, on the other hand, that strikes us as very foreign, very, very remote and alien, the idea of a multiplicity of gods. Even though we do have the concept of the Trinity, the idea of having a whole pantheon of gods is something that seems very, very odd to us.
Yeah, Hinduism is an amazing religion in that it's almost like a buffet line at a restaurant. You can walk through the line and get just about anything you want. You can believe almost anything you want with Hinduism, so you'll have people who believe in thousands and thousands of gods. You'll have people who believe in a few gods, dozens or hundreds. Some believe in three, some believe in one, some don't believe in a god at all. And so Hinduism is that melting pot of religions where it's really hard to find anything that's truly objective truth that is worth building society or community around, because everyone's got their own version of the truth in Hinduism.
In a sense, it almost seems like the Hindu gods are just sort of images, representations of a certain facet of life. Hindus probably feel very differently about that, but looking at it from the point of view of a Christian, that's sort of what I've often thought.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment from a Western perspective especially. And, you know, you now have Hinduism, the name Hindu originally is a takeoff of Hindu, the Indus River, actually. Hmm. And it was originally just a language and a culture, and so it grew up with so many different aspects to the faith. And now you've got it in the Western civilization as well. You've got a bunch of notable Hindus in America, in entertainment, and some in sports, and some in literature. And again, they've got such a different way of seeing the world. And I think that your perspective is a very valid one, that many of us look at it and see these gods, you know, almost in a sense, like the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, did their gods. So they would see their gods in the frogs, and they would see their god in the Nile, and the sun was one of their gods, Ra, as he coursed across the sky. And you know, they had thousands of gods as well. It's interesting, in fact, to go back and work through the story of Moses and the various times he confronted Pharaoh and Pharaoh's gods. Each curse that he had, whether it was the infestation of frogs, whether it was turning the Nile to red, each one of those was a conquering of a various god within the Egyptian system. And so it's not a far-fetched idea. It's actually one that's common across pagan faiths.
There was a time when you could have said that America was purely a Christian country, that our culture was consistent and based on our biblical traditions. Now I don't think that's true. We are living with people from all over the world, and we're faced with all of these various religious views rubbing up against each other. How do we find enough common ground? How do we recognize the truths that the other faiths do propose and mix that all together into some kind of social cohesion?
Yeah, we've got to be real careful in this country, because this country was founded upon several basic ideas: inclusion of others, no government mandated religion, and yet the country was also founded by people who had basic common Christian beliefs and understandings. Even if they weren't Christians, they at least, in our sense of the word, they at least had that core understanding of aspects of morality and ethics and things like that. And so with our plurality and our willingness to open the door to anyone to come into the country, we have set up a situation which can lead to great problems if the church, and I mean by that the church universal, so I include, from my perspective, not only the Catholic Church, but a number of Protestant denominations as well. And if the church universal does not do its part to influence, to be that salt Jesus talked about, that preservative for culture, if we don't do our part, we run the risk of culture becoming diluted by morality and ethics and priorities of non-Christian people and their belief system. It's kind of like if you take a bathtub with hot water and you start putting cold water into it, that hot water won't stay in the tub. It'll become lukewarm because of the effect of the cold. You've got to take the cold water coming in and heat it to keep the tub hot. And I feel like we're at a point now where it's become obvious that the church has failed in its ability to love and through love reach all of these other folks with all of these other ideologies that have come into our country. And so we see our country becoming lukewarm in its ideologies that we consider important because we haven't been heating the water that's been coming in. And so what the church has got an opportunity to do now and a calling to do is to be the light on a hill, to be the salt of the earth, to permeate our culture with the love and the truth that is wrapped up in the Lord Jesus and his church.
Well, of course, we face an extremely aggressive challenge, not from people of other faith as much as from atheists and agnostics and people who are hell-bent on destroying religion in general. Are you confident that we can forge bonds with other people who value religious faith and present some sort of a common front against the challenge of atheism?
I think there's a spectrum here, Bill. I think that there are some people that are so literally hell-bent to destroy anything associated with God that we have no chance with them. I mean, we've got to remember the evil forces of the world crucified Jesus himself. They martyred so many of the early church. One early church father declared that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. It caused the church to grow. We should never beguile ourselves with the concept that the world is going to love Jesus. But that's not the whole world. There are those who will. And what we need to be doing is to reach out to those who will. whether they're atheists, whether they're Muslims, whether they're Hindu, whether they're Buddhist, whatever persuasion of faith they may be or non-faith they may be. We need to find common ground. We need to be the walking expression of Jesus and his love and his compassion, as well as his zeal for truth. And so if we can be those things, then we can alter our culture, even if we can't make it the Eden that we would like it to be. You know, the United States of America will never be God's heaven. We're just working our way there. But we can make our country a much better, much more secure place that walks greater in the blessings of God if we will be the kind of influence in this world that we can be.
Well, that's the challenge before us. Mark Lanier, his book is Religions on Trial, A Lawyer Examines Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, and More. It's from InterVarsity Press, and I assume it's available through the normal channels of distribution. Can you get it on Amazon and all that?
Oh, of course you can. And for those who might be interested, this is volume 3 of a trilogy, but volume 2 is Atheism and Agnosticism on Trial.
Oh.
And I really try and explore ways we can dialogue with them, as well as my common sense reasons before a jury that neither of those stand up as an explanation of reality and how the world is. Both of them have internal rational flaws to them. And so I'd urge all of your listeners to know that when God says Jesus is the truth, this is a truth that permeates all of life, and we can hold on to it, address it, examine it, and walk away satisfied that we've got truth.
Well, you've taken a very compelling and really novel approach. It's quite intriguing. I'll have to dive into these books myself and see some of your arguments. Meanwhile, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate your taking time to talk about all of this and delve deeply into what is a great challenge of our time.
Bill, may God bless you and your show and all of your listeners. Thank you for what you're doing. You're helping make the world a better place.
Unlikely as it might seem, the devil is a hot property right now. Satanic references are all over the media. Just think of the Grammy Awards broadcast. Singers and bands have long filled their songs and stage acts with hellish allusions. Madonna is only one example. Even corporate logos have included demonic symbolism. The LGBTQ crowd embraces it enthusiastically. And just as superhero and fantasy fans have their Comic-Con gatherings, now there's Satan-Con, an opportunity for devil aficionados to gather and celebrate all things diabolical. I can't help thinking this isn't exactly the healthiest preoccupation, and I'm not alone in that. Jesse Romero, the well-known Catholic author, evangelist, and radio host, keeps a close eye on this fascination with Satan, and he's with us now. Jesse, why are people so entranced by what's always been considered the greatest exemplar of evil?
I think because we've become more of a secular society, a more of a godless society. We've kicked God out of schools, medical ethics, tried to remove God from matrimony, family life. And so we're just living the effects of a secular godless society. When Christianity wanes in its influence, it's going to be filled up with something else, with some counterfeit. And the counterfeit religion that we're seeing that's rising up in America is Satanism.
It seems kind of odd to me, though. I mean, if you talk to a lot of people, they'll brag about being agnostics or atheists or whatever. They think of themselves as far too intelligent to be preoccupied with ideas like God. And yet they'll give themselves to something like this.
Exactly. There's an inconsistency. People that believe they're so sophisticated that they don't believe in God, that they're, you know, that's for neophytes and people that are simple-minded, but yet they are totally given over to this religion of Satanism and the dogmas that go along with it. So there's an inconsistency there because they do believe in the supernatural, obviously. They just believe in the supernatural as it suits them. one of the precepts of Satanism, one of their doctrines is, do as thou wilt, that is the whole of the law. That means follow your own passions and your own disordered appetites and your own emotions. And that suits well with the average American. People don't want to be told what to do, especially, you know, what they put in their body, what their bedroom practices are. And so Satanism is a perfect fit. Do as thou wilt, that's the whole of the law. And yet, they can consider themselves spiritual, but not necessarily aligned with the Judeo-Christian religion.
Why do you suppose the entertainment industry and other elements of business have gotten onto this? I mean, I guess there's money in it. Can't deny that. It seems like they're undercutting, in a certain sense, the validity of music and art. Maybe it's a generational thing, because I grew up in a time when people were singing about liberation and self-fulfillment and all of those great ideas from the 60s. It just seems like such an odd turnaround now that they should be celebrating this kind of weird, negative spirituality.
And I'll tell you why I believe this is happening is because the church is losing its power in the public square. And once again, wherever you see Christianity, where the power diminishes, where the influence of Christianity diminishes, it's going to be replaced with something else. In some parts of the world, it's being replaced with communism. In some parts of the world, where Christianity is waning, with, you know, radical Islamic religion. And in the West, it's being replaced by secular humanist and also Satanism, which is basically one and the same, because you talk to a lot of Satanists, they'll tell you, we're free thinkers. We believe in reason alone. And so you'll find that Satanists will identify themselves as free thinkers and Satanists in the very same sentence.
Well, I know that in your work, you've come into contact with some odd experiences and supernatural kinds of phenomena. It's got to be scary when you come face-to-face with something like that.
We all come face-to-face with it. Most people don't pay any attention to it. Demons have been studying us since they were created back in Genesis chapter 1, verse 3. That's all they do is just study the human person, because they only have one thing to do all day. They don't sleep. They don't get thirsty. They don't have to use a restroom. They don't shower. They don't go to the gym and work out. They don't play on the internet. They don't have to cook meals. They're pure spiritual beings, and all they do is study the human person since the days of Adam and Eve and try to see who they can tempt to fall into mortal sin, have them die in unrepented mortal sin, and then be their tormentors and torturers in hell for all eternity. And so these preternatural beings called angels, they're all over. We know that from Catholic teaching, there's at least one angel for every human person. Every human person has a guardian angel. And in the same token, you'll also find exorcists will teach that every human being also has a demon assigned to him as well. So this is what we're dealing with. They just seem to be more prevalent right now, or more open, or showing their face more. And I say this because there's a rise in Satanism in the West like we've never seen it before. It's always been there, but they've always been kind of under the radar. But now, like you said, we have satanic-laced performances, you know, during Super Bowl halftime shows, during Grammy Awards, Emmy Awards. You have Satanists that are military and prison chaplains. You have satanic statues erected all over the country, oftentimes next to nativity scenes. You have Satanists that are doing invocations at city hall meetings. You have Satanists that are filing lawsuits, legalized abortion. You have Satanists that are doing after-school programs, taking care of children, passing out satanic coloring books. You could go to Walmart, Amazon.com. You can buy satanic statues, satanic paraphernalia. And Hollywood is controlled basically by, many of them are open Satanists, starting with the Madonna. She wears Illuminati patches all over her wardrobe. She also admits that she's part of the Kabbalah. That's all occult. What's the definition of the occult? It means secret, a secret society that's involved in divination, superstitious practices, and the invocation of evil spirits. Welcome to the brave new world, my friend.
Well, where do we go from here? I mean, now we find ourselves sort of like the ancient Israelites in the middle of all of these pagan statues and high places and all of that. How do we get back from a thing like that?
Well, there's a micro plan and then there's a macro plan. On the micro level, I think every Catholic, every person of faith has to batten down the hatches, and we have to work on our own interior life, our own relationship with God, our own interiority. It's got to be strong. It's got to be stronger than ever, or we're going to be useless to our family, our spouses, and we'll be useless to the church. We'll be useless to the community. Focus on your personal relationship with the Lord and make it as strong as possible. Secondly, focus on your domestic church, which that means your wife, your kids, your grandchildren. Inform them, evangelize them, catechize them, encourage them, pray for them. We've got to save our families beyond anything else. That's the first order of business, as the Bible says in Joshua 24:15 and Acts 16:31. I think the third thing that we have to do is be an influencer. Every one of us has a certain network. We have certain specific social contacts. We have a unique family, a unique set of friends. We're called to evangelize them, teach them about the Lord Jesus Christ, the Ten Commandments, inform them, encourage them. Encourage them in their faith walk and model a life of virtue for them, and teach them how to promote the common good and a culture of life by voting for people that are going to bring us back to our underpinnings of one nation under God. And also, I would also say, number four, don't be discouraged. Don't allow the enormity of the task that lies in front of us. Don't let that overwhelm you. I remember Mother Teresa, she recognized that her efforts and those of her fellow sisters of charity, they were, in her own words, she would say, "Our efforts are a drop in the vast ocean of need." But guess what? Mother Teresa, she never wavered. And that's why we're talking about her today. There's also a very famous author and orator named Everett Hale, who died back in 1909. He says, "I'm only one, but I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. What I can do, I ought to do. And what I ought to do, by the grace of God, I will do." So in other words, we've got to stay the course. We've got to use our talents for God, do your best, and stay in your lane. And the last thing that I would say is, remember, at the end of the day, remember God's in control. He's not asleep. This is His world. He loves everybody in this planet. This is His Catholic Church, and His divine providence is guiding the church through these rough waters for final victory. St. John the 23rd, rest in peace, who died back in 1962, at the end of his day, after a long day's work, he would say, quote, "It's your church, God. I'm going to bed." 8 words before he went to bed. And we got to remember that, not to take all the problems of the church and the country on our shoulders. We got to give them to God. God has bigger shoulders than we do, and God's going to be up all night anyway.
Well, that is reassuring. Hey, what's the best way for people to follow your work?
My website, if you want to get a hold of me, go to my store and take a look at some of the books that I've written and invite me for speaking engagements, is jesseromero.com. The internet radio network that I started is called vmpr.org, vmpr.org. That's called virginmostpowerfulradio.org. You can follow my daily radio shows. I do 2 a day, Monday through Friday. I post a lot of other conferences that I'm involved in around the country.
Jesse Romero, hey, thank you very, very much for being with us. I appreciate you taking time to talk to us and encourage us.
You're welcome, my friend. God bless you, my friend, and keep the faith.
Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Kuras provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.